Welcome to the Learning Minds podcast, the official podcast of Khyber Medical College. I'm your host, Nuri Rabia, a member of the class 2027. Join me as we dive into the world of medical innovation, uncover insights from the leading experts, and explore the inspiring journey of those shaping the future of healthcare and research. In this episode, we're honored to welcome our esteemed guest, Dr. Najeeb Ul-Haq, a distinguished hepatologist, visionary medical educator, and a prominent voice in ethical clinical practice. He is the ex-dean of Peshawar Medical College and served as a member of HEC Evaluation Committee of Research Project, the PMRC Technical Advisory Committee, and was founder member Senate of KMU and member syndicate Peshawar University while a fourth-year medical student in KMC. His profound interest in medical ethics and student-led innovation has shaped his pivotal role in advancing ethical research and academic leadership across Pakistan. As the patron of the Prime Foundation and supervises not only Peshawar Medical College, but also Peshawar Dental College, Rufaida Nursing College, Prime Institute of Public Health, College of Allied Health Sciences, and Department. Dr. Najeeb continues to mentor future healthcare professionals, emphasizing human dignity, beneficence, and justice in clinical decision making. His decision to shaping responsive health systems through education and research makes him a truly inspiring figure for medical students worldwide. Sir, thank you, sir, for taking out time out of your busy schedule and joining us on our podcast.
Welcome.
Sir, you are a very huge advocate of medical ethics. So according to you, what are the core or basic medical ethics that every medical student or professional should know or work on? Could you please share some of your insights on that?
I'm not a huge advocate, but a humble student of the same area, medical ethics. And the answer to your question is that it's not only the global ethics that we all know about, the five core values, but the cultural and faith sensitive issues that we need to address, particularly in our own circumstances. We are a Muslim majority country, and we know we need to address issues of patients, doctors, public, all together related to our profession. So in my view, there are some differences between the global medical ethics and the faith-based medical ethics, which may belong to Muslims or which may belong to Jews. You know about that probably. And so is Christian. So we need to have both these things together to go for the medical ethics. This is one. And the second is that this area should start right as a medical student, not as a separate subject. The unfortunate part of it is that we started as a separate subject. We teach it as a separate subject. And it looks something different than the medicine. We need to incorporate all this in the curriculum in a way where you are teaching, for example, transplant in surgery. That is the time to teach them the issues of ethical issues of transplant. And that is the time also to tell them the ethical issue related to Islamic perspective of the transplant. So that becomes then relevant and you can probably digest it much easier than teaching it as a separate subject.
Sir, you're emphasizing more on the Islamic aspects of how medical ethics should be incorporated into the curricula. So could you share what would you want the curricula to be like in if it were in your hand to change it, and maybe share one or two examples, how would you change it?
As for the ethics is concerned, as I said, it has to be incorporated within the curriculum itself. And I'll give you a few examples. We all know the doctor-pharma relation issues globally, and there are clear global ethics, whether you're working in America or UK or Pakistan. Rather, they are probably better than us in that way, and they have good rules and regulations. And they are more compliant of the ethical standards than what we are. Having said that, there are other issues in doctor-pharma relation, which belong to a Muslim doctor in particular. Okay. For example, medicine containing haram contents. They will not care about that, but we need to care about that. Similarly, there may be issues in gender interactions, for example. Their standards may be totally different. Like I had been working in UK, there the exposure of a patient is a standardized procedures, which according to us, we have to define our limits of exposure. Though Islam gives us full liberty, if we need exposure, we can expose everything. That is not a problem. But we should know our limits of interaction with females. Similarly, females should know their interaction with males. So these are the issues that are related to Islamic part. But to be honest, there overall, if you take the global ethics, most of them, I would say 80 to 90% are the same what we are talking about Islamic ethics. Sure. But only part of it that we need as a Muslim, we need to do that as well. Okay. That should be in. I will give you one example, practical example. I was invited to Malaysia for final year exam. So on one ASCII station, there was outside, there was displayed on a card, here is a patient who is 4 months pregnant and she wants to get aborted. When I went inside, I was allowed to only observe and examine. Observe and examine the examiners rather than the students. Okay. The gynecologist was asking the student, and the student was a Buddhist student. He was not a Muslim student. That what we would do and explain the ethics of Malaysian law and blah, blah. He did that. Then she asked a very strange question from that non-Muslim, that what are the Islamic views on abortion before and after 4 months? I was astonished. Then she asked, what are maqasid sharia? So I was again astonished. When the student went out, I asked the lady, she was a professor of gynecology, why you are asking this boy who is a non-Muslim and you are asking questions which even our own faculty, non-Muslim faculty. She said, no, look, we don't have it to be allergic. They have to face 70% of Muslim population while they are working in Malaysia. So they should know their issues and they should explain their issues in their perspective. So I saluted her. Yes, I agree. This is what I mean by incorporating our ethics with the global ethics. But there is hardly few differences, but we need to know that. We need to know our ethics as well.
Yes, sir. Sir, like, seems as if like you've studied medical ethics enough to like know how to, you know, incorporate them. But how, like, ever in your clinical experience, like, has it ever happened that some of your principles are like, they sometimes get challenged, you know, when you're working in a setting, your ethics and some things, like, just like you said, the pharma companies and things, you know, so you, some of the principles, they get challenged in real world practice. So how would you navigate these issues? Like, sometimes you have to do, might not have to do the ethically right thing, sometimes go against it. So how would you navigate that issue?
This question has two parts, actually. One is regarding the medical ethics that we practice. It is easy.
Yes.
You can easily overcome that and you can do whatever you want to do. The second part is the ethics. Like, for example, decisions must be based on merit and justice. This is the global ethics. And this is the Islamic ethics as well. I had faced such things in my career. I will give you one example. There was a governor of this province. His name was General Orakzai. Ali Jan Orakzai, I think, if I correctly remember. In our first year admission, his ADC, who was a brigadier, came. And he was sitting at the same chair where you are sitting. And he gave me a name that this is the cousin of, son of the cousin of Orakzai, and he needs admission in your medical school.
Okay.
When I looked at it, I called for the merit list. But before that, I served him a good cup of tea, made him comfortable. Then I called for the list and showed him that his number on merit is 500 and something. Mm-hmm. Well, we at that time were admitting only 100 students.
Yes.
So I told him that I will need to probably these 400 students who are above his merit, I will need to put him up above all them. So do you think it will be justified? Even if it is justified in this world by some people, how would I answer to my Allah and the day of after? That how could you do that? So he told me that means I should tell General Saab that it cannot be done. So I told him, yes, it will be a great favor to me. So he went away. And we were hoping that we will get a love letter from the governor house soon. But what finally happened, we did get a love letter. After 2 weeks, I received a letter by name from General Leclerc. And I told my colleagues that here is the love letter that we were expecting. But when I opened it and I salute to that person, he had written, I know about how you have established Peshawar Medical College, taking care of all the merit, etc. And I would like you to give me a presentation in Governor House because we are intending to develop a Fata Medical College.
That's
I thank Allah. So once you stick to your principles and you have tawakkal on Allah, there is no translation of tawakkal in English. So one can work on these things.
This is like a very rare thing, to be honest, because people would not take such a huge step. Most people, they would not take such a huge step. But it's a very nice thing. And this is how we would all grow, to be honest. Like, we all like blame it on the other person. Yeah, if that person is doing, I'm going to do it too. Yeah. But it's a very nice thing how like you would not go according to the norms of the society. Yeah. And you would establish your own principles and, you know.
Yes.
So, yeah. So it was like ethically right thing that kind of conflicted with the system which you faced it, and it's a very nice thing, and we're really happy for you to like share these insights, because a lot of people out there would take a lot of advantage out of these words.
Yes, yes. And I think it is very important to do this.
Yeah.
Because if we keep on every time cribbing about the society, yeah, and every time blaming others for not changing, first we have to change ourselves. And we should believe in Allah that He will favor us in such situation. It is not that every time it will go wrong. In the, now we are about 20 years old because we started in March 2005. Okay. So we are already 20 years.
Okay.
In these 20 years, no one can tell me or give me one example where we have gone out of merit. Though private medical college, you know about them, unfortunately.
That's true.
But no one can give a single example that we have violated merit.
MashaAllah, MashaAllah. That's really, really nice to hear. Coming on to the research and innovation part, a lot of these students these days, they want to do research, but they're unaware of the resources. They don't know where to start. They don't know where to go. And it's like a very haphazard kind of thing. People want to do research because it's needed for the international exams and everything. But they're unaware of how they do it. So what would you say about it? Like, how would you guide such students?
First of all, I think this idea that it's a resource intensive thing, it should be clarified. It is not a resource intensive thing. Unfortunate part is that it is not incorporated in our curriculum from the beginning, and let the students know that simple things can be done, which may be so useful. I'll give you one example. Long ago, I read an article in British Journal of Surgery that was also done by a fourth year medical student. What he did was, this is innovation. All patients of laparotomy, because if you do laparotomy, you will see gas under the diaphragm. He just did follow-up x-rays weekly and concluded that if you do a laparotomy, so the gas under the diaphragm will disappear after, say, 4 weeks. I don't remember the duration. So if you have a perforation before that, you cannot rely on the gas under the diaphragm. Mm-hmm. But if you have a perforation after that, then you can think that is not because of a laparotomy. Mm-hmm. It is because of a gut perforation.
Okay.
Now look at this very simple thing.
Yes.
But how useful it is. So that is what we need to do. But I agree with you that there should be some awareness about research at the student level, and there should also be some allocation of fund for them as well. Like colleges spend millions on other things, but when it comes to this, it becomes difficult for them to support.
Yes.
So it's something, not one student or just one facet of the issue, but it's a multi-prong. But I believe it has to start from the very beginning, and the students should know that research necessarily doesn't mean to be very cost intensive, and they can do it even without that.
But sir, thing is that, like, learning meta-analysis, for example, and learning all of these cross-sectional studies, cohorts, it requires a lot of guidance. You will have to spend some amount of money on it. Or just like you said, our colleges would not invest in that part, but they would invest in other things that are not that much important, but about the research part in specific, they would not like invest so much. So like, how would you say, what would be the value of these things? Like, you know, as for people who cannot afford it, but they want to do it, how would they like do it and go out for it?
I think meta-analysis would not cost too much money. You have the resources. For example, we also have an HEC access, and medical college also an HEC access. You can take it, but you need guidance on that, how to do it.
Yes, sir.
But this will not be very cost intensive. It will be time intensive.
Yes, sir.
It will be resource intensive in terms of getting hundreds of papers and analyzing them. You have a statistician, you have a research cell. I hope it is still there in the
it's
medical
still there, it's still there.
So you can take their help. But others may be cost intensive, where you might need at least some money to complete some of that, get some of the data. And for that, as I already said, that if not too much, at least there should be some money allocated for that.
Okay, sir. Sir, you've served on the PMRC Technical Advisory Committee, right? So what would make a student research stand out to bodies like this? Like, when you're choosing papers, in like a good paper, what would make a paper stand out?
Actually, nowadays the standard is, what is the impact factor?
Okay.
This is commonly used as a standard of the research. I personally feel it is important, no doubt. Even for promotion, you need, as per HEC rule, these impact factor journals. But more important is that, what is the impact of that research on the society?
Okay.
Be it a non-impact factor journal, but the important thing is, what is the ultimate result of that, and what is the impact of the society? Okay. That is, in my view, more important. One of our research, which was published in Lancet, it was regarding before this injectable polio, there was only oral polio vaccination. And then we started a giant project with Aga Khan, and we did it in this area, while the Aga Khan did it in South. That was funded by Bill Gates. And we proved that injectable vaccination, addition to the polio oral vaccination, would enhance the results and enhance the immunity. So ultimately, that was declared as the best paper, polio paper, internationally by the British Medical Journal, by the Lancet. But the important thing was its implication on the public, not its impact factor. So I personally feel it may be small research. Like, I give you the example of this fourth year student, but it has an impact. So the impact is more important than the impact factor, in my view.
Okay, sir, as the Dean of Peshawar Medical College, how do you envision the ideal medical graduate of the future? And what qualities do they absolutely need to have, like, that is, you think a person should have as they graduate?
Let me first clarify that I am not the dean now. I was the founder dean of the medical college. Now I am the patron of the institution.
Okay.
And it includes dental college, nursing college, this college, etc. But your question was about the medical students.
Yes, sir. What do they have to have?
The mission statement that we fixed for our college was excellence in professional competence and ethical values. And this was after a lot of discussions, and we made it an informed decision on this and a thoughtful decision. And this is what I would like to see in everybody, including American students, that the first thing that they have to be professionally competent. If they are not professionally competent and they talk of ethics and they talk of Islam, it sometimes may be even counterproductive. So the first thing we need is to be professionally competent. And professionally competent means both in knowledge and skills, but in addition in attitude. The knowledge, skill and attitude, we know about this triad of
meditation.
Now the attitude would come with ethical confidence. So if we have these three competences together, so I think it's very easy to achieve our goals. This is one part.
Okay.
The second part, again, it is not only for the medical student, but for all of us, that we need a vision. What do we want to do in life? Like many of the medical students, if you ask them, they will say, I want to become a surgeon. I want to become a cardiothoracic surgeon. I want to become a cardiologist. Fine, good enough. But is that the final thing you want to do in life? I think the answer is no. It is a step towards something that you want to achieve. And that something must be defined by everybody for him or herself. And that will actually move you through the difficulties with confidence and probably easiness as well. So that makes it easiness for everybody. But professional competence is a must before any other competence for the medical students.
So you talked about this thing, you know, a lot of our medical students, there's usually this thing about surgery and medicine that a lot of people, it's a thing where students say that, oh, surgery is a lot more competitive, like people look up to them, as in surgeons in specific, like people look up to them in a lot more in a, you know, good way or something, you know. So what do you think about that, like about consultants and about the surgeons thing? Because a lot of the students, they go to surgery just for the hype of it. That's it.
I usually tell my surgical colleagues, that's what is surgeon, surge in. It is surgeon. And even if you say it in Urdu, sar jin, where you have jin inside your sir, so you are a surgeon. I personally think every profession is important.
Yes.
Everyone has its own role. But having said that, I also believe that those who can think better and who have some insight into the larger issues and larger canvas of the society and the medical profession, probably surgery does not need it that much. It is needed everywhere, but these people should go to medicine and allied. Not that I belong to medicine and allied, but there are many occasions where you feel so handicapped in medicine that you have to call your surgical colleague. The results are good. In one day time, you get the result. That's the beauty of surgery. But as I said, these are interdependent things.
Yes.
Every surgery, medicine, ENT, whatever, should be given their own respect fully.
Yes, sir.
No one more and no one less.
Yes.
They are all the same, in my view.
Yes, because you cannot work without a surgeon, but you can never work without a consultant.
Yes.
You need to go hand in hand for both of them.
Yes.
And I feel like we need to look at all the specialties the same way. It's just like a difference of interests. Like,
yes,
whatever you like, you go for that.
Yes. Like your body. If you say my eye is more important, but my nose is more than that,
it's exactly
possible.
That's right. So, sir, what has kept you going up till now? Like, what fuels your passion after all these years? Your passion about medical ethics, your passion about medicine, and your passion about making a change in the society that would be good for everyone.
I think I partly addressed your question that everyone should have his own vision for life.
Yes.
Otherwise, you will be carried away by somebody else's vision.
Yes.
In this country, people usually talk bad about the country, bad about the people, etc. Mm. But we have so many good examples.
Yes, we do.
Like this Indus Hospital, for example. Dr. Bari, maybe you have heard about him or not. He has got all free service. I went there twice.
Okay.
He belongs to Peshawar. And he started it in Karachi, the Indus Hospital. Now its budget is more than the health budget of Balochistan.
That's nice.
And it is all free. And it is paperless. You can go for a toenail surgery to a cardiac surgery, and they will never ask you you can afford it or not. You have to declare yourself that you are entitled for zakat or not. If you are not, how much can you afford? You just have to declare. No one will ask you about that. And he has done it. He started, you know, from how much? He started from 10,000 rupees initially. And not very long ago, probably about 20 years ago. And now this, he has gone to this level.
Okay.
The second example is again of this Ahuwat Foundation. This man has got now the biggest microfinancing, which is interest-free in the whole world. He did it in the same way. Look at Edi. There are many, so many examples, but unfortunately, we are carried away by negative things.
Okay.
So, in my view, it's your vision about your life and about your purpose of life which will keep you going. But if you don't have that, on every small hurdle, you will feel depressed and think that the world has destroyed for you. So, the vision is more important. And, you know, as a Muslim, we have a very clear vision that whatever we are doing is ultimately be rewarded in Akhirah. So why should we worry about something which has not happened in our life?
Yes. Sir, who was your like one mentor or experience that fundamentally changed your life and how? Like, who was one person who was a turning point in your life from whom you learned a lot and who was like a, you know, the person in your life?
My father, I can say without any hesitation, without any hesitation. And I will also tell you, he never sermoned. He never gave me lectures on what to do in life. Whatever he wanted to convey me, he did it himself. And I learned from his actions, not from his sermons. لِمَا تَقُولُونَ مَا لَا تَفْعَلُونَ. This is what Quran says. Don't say what you are not doing. So, he was the person who really inspired me. And the message that he gave was always through example, role modeling. This is true even for today. Whatever we say, people say about communication skills and all, these are all important. But credibility is more important. So my father was the one who from whom I really learned a lot, a lot.
Sir, you really look up to your father, and even though he hasn't, like, you know, said anything, or but he's yeah. taught you through his actions,
yeah.
And I'm pretty sure you are teaching others through your actions too.
I'm trying to do that.
Yes, mashallah, mashallah. So, sir, if you had like 5 minutes still, like, if you would want to say something to people, if you had 5 minutes to address every medical student in Pakistan, what would be your message to them?
I think the first we discussed that they have to be professionally competent,
okay.
And they have to be ethical. The second, they must have a vision. Without a vision, you will be lost. So they must have a vision. And the third, which in our society is very important, even otherwise, there should be no arrogance. Arrogance is something which destroys everything. And you know, the Prophet ﷺ said, ke jiske dil mein zarra bhar, an iota of arrogance, he will not go to Jannah. Unfortunately, I'm saying it unfortunately again, our doctors are very arrogant. I include myself, I'm not an exception, but I try not to be. So arrogance must be avoided. And secondly, they also should respect everyone. Respect others and get respected. If you don't respect others, you will never get respected. So these are in some basic life soft skills that we need to know and adopt and try our best. We are human beings. We will still commit mistakes. But as long as we are aware that we are committing a mistake and try to undo it, so inshallah, we'll progress.
Inshallah. So you talked in specific about vision. A person should have a vision. Especially the students, they should know what they're doing, or maybe in future. How would a person, like usually, like for example, me, take me for example, I wouldn't know what I want to do in future. I have no idea. I maybe am like waiting for my house job or something to know what I want to do. So what do you think about that? Like people are usually confused, the students. So how would they know which field they belong to or they want to pursue?
The vision, this is only one part of vision. When I talk of vision, it means your role as a doctor, your role as a family member, your role as a friend, your role with public, your role as part of the global community, and your role as part of the Muslim Ummah. These are all included in vision. The one you are talking about, the part, I think, there are many sessions on counseling, people do it, students counseling how to do it. But more important is, in my view, your own feeling about a profession. The standard is, how do you decide it? If you decide it in a way that you like that profession and you want to do it, irrespective of how much money it will generate, I'm not saying it is not, it is important. But that should not be the primary decision maker. The primary decision maker is that what do you like most? What are your own tendencies toward a profession? Become physician, surgeon, ENT specialist, or whatever. But that is more important than... Then, of course, you keep on searching as well. That what are the different... where is the progress nowadays? Because there are specialties where you can really progress and make a difference to the society. Yes, so, but it is not important. Sometimes people take, don't be a physician because there are so many. You must have heard this.
Yes, sir.
When I was doing my MRCP, believe me, even at that time, many people, why you are wasting your time, MRCP? There are so many big guns like Professor Siraj, may Allah bless him, Professor Nasir, Professor Raza. There are so many good physicians. You will have no place in the society. It didn't matter. I say I like it. I topped non-medical in FSC. I got admission in engineering college. Yeah. But then I told my father again, I used to tell him that I want to become a doctor. I don't like engineering. But my father was tempted to tell me that, no, your brother is engineer and he will guide you, etc., etc. When I got admission in engineering college, I told him again that I'm ready to lose one more year, but I want to go to medical college. So he thought about it little and said, okay. So I did a biology additionally. So that was one extra year. Then I had to spend one more year in engineering, in the medical, because it was 5 years, engineering was four, practically 2 years. And if you include the house job, then 3 years. But I never repented on that. Those 3 years, because I like medicine. So it's your liking, your choice, your tendencies, your inside, how do you feel about it? So that should be the main decision maker. The others, how much money it will generate, how it will, these are all important, but not that much.
Okay, sir. Sir, if we come to the students, you know, the communication skill of the students and everything. So, in your experience, what is the most important communication skill a doctor should master, like to have a lasting patient trust? Like the doctors these days, they wouldn't give their patients that much of an importance. Yes. And I I don't want to mention it, but like some of the doctors, they would only care about it in the clinical practice. Like they have their own clinics and they would, you know, only give importance in that, and that's it. So what do you think, like what communication skills should even every doctor have to generate a good lasting patient trust?
The root cause lies in your thinking and your faith. If that is clear, then it will not have a problem. But having said that, I think the minimum is honesty, respect, and what I said, no arrogance. If you have these three skills and these three attributes in your personality, so even if you have a little poor communication in expressing your view, it will still work. But even if you have the best communication, it's like an iceberg. The tip is the communication skills. But down there is a huge thing which you are not seeing, but that is the credibility. Like if I keep on sermoning my students, I keep on sermoning my colleagues, etc., etc. But every one of them knows that this Dr. Rajeev is a dishonest person. He's greedy. He doesn't care for patients. So whatever I'm saying is useless. But if I have a credibility and they know that he doesn't do this thing, so even if I'm a little poor in communication, it will still work. So in my view, the credibility is very important. But having said that, for medical student, they should be more expressive. They should not be hesitant to express that even if it is wrong, so what? So they should be more expressive. I noted this one thing in UK, the main handicap of our student is that they are not expressive. They don't come up. Sometimes even their answer is right, but they still don't want to come up because they are hesitant to express. So they shouldn't.
Yes, sir. Like it would have an impact on the progress of a medical student, of course, you know.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Sir, you know about like nonverbal cues. You said a person should have like, you know, good intentions and yes, should be like the tip of the iceberg, just like you said. That is the communication skill, and the rest of it is like your intentions and everything. Sir, nonverbal cues, that is a part of it, you know, like tone, posture, facial expressions, how you meet a patient and how you express yourself, tiny bit, but like it's still there, it's still a part of it, you know.
Yes.
You cannot completely ignore these things.
Of course.
So how can the students become more aware and intentional about these patient encounters? Because we're entering into that part, like some of our final year students, us, we're going to be in the hospital in a year or two. So what should we do in specific about these things?
I think one is they should know scientifically, they should be taught, they should have presentations from somebody. Like I recently had, probably 3 weeks ago, I had presentation with some of my staff members on the communication skills. They should know that what is the value of verbal, body language, and other areas of communication. This is scientific part of it. The second part is that, as I said earlier, they should also know that these will only work when you have certain attributes in your body. But the body language, as far as it's concerned, the person should feel that you feel for him. And what you see is what he is seeing. This is called empathy. So if you have empathy rather than sympathy only, then I think things become right. And the other person you are confronting, even if you, for some reason, have some harsh words with him. Like, for example, our parents, sometimes they have harsh words. But the child feels that this is for me. So if the other person feels that it is for him and you are caring for him, what I'm describing is an empathy, so it should be from your face, it should be from your actions, and it should be from your verbal communication as well. So all these together will convey the right message.
Oh, yes, sir, because like they say that a patient's, you know, half of the illness gets cured when the doctor is empathetic towards them. Like, yes, they feel so good after meeting a nice doctor that like half of their illness just goes away. So coming on to our last few questions, like how can medical students start developing leadership skills while they're still in school? Because you need some of these leadership skills to know how to do things. So what do you think about that? How can they build such leadership skills?
I think the first thing they should realize that they are the one in the society who had the best IQs and got the best marks and came to medical college. You know, for a very long time, good or bad, but medicine is on the top. We know this. This is number one. They should realize that they should have self-awareness. Self-actualization is a little difficult, but they should have at least self-awareness, number one. Then they should have self-identity. This is the second part. These two together would put them in a position of leadership. And once they are aware of these things, now then other things come which are important for leadership. Now, you must have seen many people, or at least heard of it because you are not at that age now. But like I have seen many of my class fellows, yes, who had very good marks where they were studying. But in practical life, there were others who moved much forward than them. I'm not saying that it is not important, but the social skills and the emotional intelligence, which we call, is more important probably, if not less, than the other intelligence, including the IQ. But this, the one part is awareness about these things, that what is emotional intelligence, what is social intelligence, and the other part is practicing it. Practicing as a medical student or as a student anywhere has two levels. One is the system where they are encouraged to come up. Unfortunately, we don't have a system. We have person-dependent system. One teacher will encourage them and the other will bullshit them to the extent that he will never even talk in front of them. So the system, but more important, they should realize themselves. The second part, other than the teacher, is the student themselves. You must have batches when you go to the hospitals, and even so, amongst yourself, you should identify people who do not come forward and do not come up. Help them to come forward. Helping others is helping yourself. Respecting others is respecting yourself. So, in my view, these awareness, then the system, and in the system you have two components, and they should be encouraged to ask questions. I hate a teacher who scolds a student because he had a bad question. If he had not asked it, how would he know that it is a bad question? You should be encouraged. So it needs effort, but we need to do it. This is very important.
Sir, you talked about this thing. A lot of the students, including me, we're really shy when we ask questions, just like you said. We're really shy. We were already really shy to ask in front of like so many students a question that we don't know even if it makes sense or no. Like, it's a big thing to do. So how do you think a person should get the confidence to go up and ask questions for us students?
I think the first thing, as I said, he should have some awareness about himself.
Yes.
The second is, let him think just for a while that if I ask a wrong question, and if, for example, first of all, no one should laugh on that. But let's say the whole class laughed on that. What would it matter to him? Why should he take it that way that he would not ask question again? He should be proud that he asked question which was not appropriate, but he learned through that. There is a small book. Very small book, I bought it long ago, Thank You, My Enemies. And it has exactly what you are saying, that those who you are thinking are enemies are identifying maybe something which may be your actual shortcoming, so overcome that. Yes. So what? So the more important is personal understanding of this, but personal understanding obviously doesn't come itself. It comes through the system, through parents, through society and everything. So all these have to be put together to make it a proper shape. Without that, it is not possible. But I think in the student life, teacher and the peers, they play the main role. And if somebody, like I learned a lot from students and the house officers. Once I was taking around, I was a professor in Khyber Hospital. And on one bed, somehow, I scolded one house officer that I had told you last evening to carry out these orders for this patient. Why have you not? And he just kept quiet. He didn't answer me. And when I went to the office, he came to me. Can I come in, sir? I said, of course, yes, sir. So he told me, sir, bed number X. I don't remember the bed number. You scolded me on that, but it was not my bed. I felt so ashamed. So I told him, this is the apex of what I'm telling you. I told him, why didn't you tell me at that time that it was not your bed? So his answer was really shocking for me. And I still remember it. And I tried after that not to do such thing. He told me, sir, you were senior, so I thought if I tell you in front of everybody, so it will not be good for you. I learned from him, really. And since then, I never any scolded anyone on that. So you learn every stage of life. You learn from everyone. Maybe he is a professor or he is a medical student, even your PM. So you learn from everybody. We should keep on learning and learning and learning.
So even if you feel embarrassed, yes, that's fine.
The lesson was that before you reprimand somebody, you should at least know that he is the one who needs it instead of doing that.
Other than having the confidence to ask questions in the class, you know, what's one skill the medical students should develop now that will make their life as a practicing doctor much easier later? Like, confidence would be one thing, but what else, in your opinion, should be it?
I'll give you the honest answer. In my view, if somebody is choosing medical profession, you should not go for easiness. Medicine is not a profession, like engineering and law and etc. It's a way of life. There's a difference between a way of life and being a professional. So in my view, medicine is not a profession. It is a way of life. And you, like somebody in the ward, when you do a round and he has pain, you would go home, but it should not go out of your mind. You should still keep on thinking about it. You are going on your way and somebody tells you, if he knows he is a doctor, he comes up to you that I have this problem. Of course, it is not something good to prescribe like that. But still, if it is a minor illness, you should not get annoyed. Help him. So that's why I'm saying it is a way of life. And we should not be looking for easiness. We should be looking for something which is more rewarding in this world and the day after. So, like I usually tell my students, my colleagues and myself as well, like doing an evening round, I am not sure about hospital now in the government sectors, but doing an evening round has become less and less and less with time. But if I realize that if I visit a patient in the morning, and 70,000 angels are praying for me, as the hadith says, and then I visit in the evening, the same would happen again. How would I not visit that person? So it's your perceptions that actually count. And that is what I say, that easiness is important, of course, in everybody's life, but easiness at the expense of something or some reward, I would say, not somebody else's issues, but some reward should be probably preferred the second one.
Yes, sir. Sir, after like all of this discussion and everything, what is the last few things you would want to share with your listeners? That what are the few some things that you want to share other than we talked about?
We talked about few things.
Yes, we did.
Professional competence and ethical value, etc., etc. But I feel very strongly that if we are not attached to ourself, our Allah, we get detached from many things. Like every machine, for example, has got inside it a leaflet which is called the operation manual. If you ask me what is the function of eye, I will be able to tell you. So would be any part of the body. But if you ask me, okay, then what is your function in this world? I have to think many times to give you an answer for that. So that answer will come from the operation manual that Allah has given us. And that operation manual is here, Quran. So detachment from Quran will lead to detachment from our roots. And if a plant gets detached from its roots, it will dry up. It will not survive. So we have to keep attached to our roots, Quran and Sunnah. This is very important for all Muslims, including the students, to know that we cannot actually survive without these things. In the Quran, it is very clearly said that they hear, but they don't. They see, but actually they don't. Like all these animals, etc., they see and hear and everything, but they don't understand. So we need to understand this thing first, and the others are, I believe, secondary to it. So, as a Muslim, it is very important. And even as a human being, those who say we don't have a faith, they still have a faith that they don't have a faith. This is their faith.
Yes.
So we should be clarity about our faith. And that will keep us alive. That will keep us going. And that will keep us encouraged and not discouraged at any stage of life.
Yes. So we should keep Quran a part of our daily prayers. We should like at least read some of it daily, so as to like, you know, be guided towards the right path, inshallah. And we should be stay consistent with our prayers and everything, inshallah.
Of course,
inshallah. Thank you so much, sir, for your sharing your insights with us and being on this podcast with us. I'm really hoping that our viewers and our listeners, they learn a lot from this podcast. And thank you so much for giving us.
I am thankful to you. After such a long time, I have an interaction with my alma mater students, you know.
Yes,
it's really a pride.
Yes.
And I like it. And when your teacher told me, I said, yes, why not? If it is from KMC, why not?
Yes.
That is my own institution.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.